Nevada gubernatorial candidate Democrat Kris Giuliani has positioned herself as the progressive choice this election cycle. She has taken a firm stance opposing the state's embattled school voucher program, known as education savings accounts. She's also calling for tougher gun laws. She sat down with KUNR's Paul Boger to talk about her platform.
What do you see as the most pressing issue facing the state right now?
Education funding, lack thereof. As I said, I'm a special ed middle school teacher. The funding formula needs to be fixed finally for the first time and just get it done. And we work on class size reduction, class load for school counselors, teacher salaries, support professionals, all the things that wrap around a school. But not everything takes money. Sometimes it's also taking a look at what's the quality of that classroom time. And Senator Woodhouse actually passed a law last session to do an audit of all the various testing to see which ones really should be in our schools and which ones take away instructional time. And I can't wait to get that report because it's important to me as a teacher. If you have 100 days of instruction and you lose 20 to testing, you need to stop teaching to the test and actually teach kids.
And what do you think lawmakers need to do to address the Nevada plan?
They started to make some changes last session with the weighted funding. So that's the piece that fixes the structural deficit within the funding formula. It's no different than when you build a house. If your foundation is off kilter, everything else on top of that is. So that's the same thing that we're going to fix. If we can take that funding formula, fix that structural deficit, and then the dollars are redirected statewide, and we make sure we do a hold harmless. If there's any loss of revenue that comes in, we've always done that when I served in the legislature. We made sure no rural county, no other county was harmed as you moved into a funding formula that actually benefited everybody. So that's what I would work on.
What do you do? What do you think needs to be done? Is it more money towards the larger districts? Is it more money towards rurals?
When the Nevada plan was created in the 60s by Senator Gibson at that time, they only based it on population. So that, and then they had a wealth equalization formula for the rural county so that they were held harmless based on mining costs and things along those lines. But over that period of time, our state has become so diverse. So they never funded autism. They never funded special education. They didn't fund English language learners. So that's what the weighted formula does, is it actually pares down and drives that into the funding formula so it's more easily distributed and more equitably distributed. So the money that was passed by the voters in 2009 that were supposed to go to public education and didn't, it went into the general fund. That's how I fund that program. And then they've created all these categories on top. You may not need that if you actually disperse and dispense it based on where the need is. And that's why I said to, if there's any kind of harm, you do no harm. You hold people harmless as you readjust that entire formula. But it's about equity in the long run, and it's about making sure your money actually goes into the classroom. And so teachers have not been compensated well. Parents will tell you that the number one reason they want their kids to have a smaller class size. As a school teacher, I would tell you, I have a saying, and it sums it up. It says, a teacher's working conditions are the student's learning conditions, and they're not anything different. So when I travel around the state, I'm finding across the state, overcrowded classrooms, kids sitting on the floor, your science there's no books for them. That's shameful. We have a moral obligation to fund public education, and it's time to do it. Can't was a swear word in my classroom, so we can get it done.
As governor, would you also work to find a compromise on funding ESAs? That's been a major debate over the last 3 or 4 years now.
No.
No?
I don't believe in taking what limited public tax dollars are there to give it to a private or parochial school. Let's talk about this. Education, especially public education, is the great equalizer, and it's the one that makes sure that every child, regardless of their ability, has access, and it's our obligation, our moral obligation, to fund that.
ESAs are the law of the land at this point. Do you just continue to unfund them or not fund them, or
no,
do you repeal that law?
You repeal the law, and that's a part of my policy.
There has been this effort to repeal key provisions of Obamacare for the last 2 years now, several years, really. You know, as governor, how do you protect Medicaid and the state exchange in light of those efforts?
I will take on the Trump administration. ACA has been phenomenal for this state, and I applaud Governor Sandoval for doing the Medicaid expansion, and I will do whatever I can to protect that part of it at the state level. That said, I think everybody recognizes we still are one of the lowest as far as reimbursement rates for doctors. And so even though we expanded it, you have people that are not taking that, or they've limited their plans as far as how many they're accepting. So part of my goal is to make sure that we are increasing those reimbursement rates so doctors will actually take the coverage that's there. But I also support moving towards a universal health care. So I know Assemblyman Sprinkle is going to bring back his legislation. He's been reworking it so that it's more workable for implementing, because we got to get it right. Otherwise, people will come back and say, oh, see, I told you single payer or universal care is wrong. We want to make sure that we do it the right way. But I think that becomes the great equalizer. I mean, the other day I read in the paper that the EpiPens that you use for people that are overdosing on the street that are first responders went from $400 to $4,500. Shameful. And that's the insurance companies driving that. And we need to get them out of our business as far as I'm concerned.
What about in rural Nevada? There is this health disparity that happens between the urban areas versus Lander, Eureka. They don't have the hospitals or the clinics there to treat the people that live there.
Right.
How do you address that?
In my rural tour, I traveled the state just to talk with people. So we met with everyday people. Number one thing was the emergency access, actually, because when you have a car accident in Tonopah, they have to wait for a helicopter to come in. And then they do a transfer at the border. So we have to do it better. And our police officers shouldn't be doing that work either because it diverts them from there. We need to take a look at our FQHCs, which are your federally qualified health centers, to make sure they're really being located where there's an underserved population instead of clustering in an area. So, for example, 3 are in Elko, none in West Wendover and Wendover. Yet they have population shifts daily of thousands of people that need access. We need to make sure that our clinics are located where people actually have resources for them. But we can do that through, we need to make sure that we have programs that actually help doctors get into school. And then once upon graduation, we help do loan forgiveness programs so that they work in an underserved area. There are ways that we can actually, we did that for teachers years ago. If I worked in a low income area, for example, a portion of my loan was paid down. So there's ways that we can get people into practice because we don't have enough everyday doctors, your family practice doctors across this state. They also had the telemedicine that they passed, but again, it comes down to broadband, but we're working on that part of it to make sure that you have that interconnectivity. But those are absolute key pieces that I've heard about from the rural areas, and I have a great deal of empathy, and I will work. That's one of my more important things is making sure not only do they have healthcare access, but we have mental health care access as well.
Where do you fall in the DACA debate, and how do you protect those residents here in the state?
Oh, that's a good question. DACA, I'm on the Immigration Coalition. I have long, I think we need to stop. It's morally wrong, all this divisiveness that we did. Trump had no reason to set this deadline. There was no reason in state law to do that. These kids came here, they're contributing, they're going to school, they're in our armed forces, and they should not be put at risk. And the saddest part is Congress needs to act and adopt absolutely positive immigration reform that works for families. They're still talking about tearing kids away from their parents, just as the DACA and TPS kids, but even new kids that are coming in for asylum with families, they're talking about separating again. There was an article a week ago that said they lost, HHS, the Human Health and Services, lost 1,500 children in this United States. How could you lose a child? They can't even account for them. That is morally wrong. I will do whatever needs to be done to be able to protect our DACA kids.
So how do you feel about Nevada's current gun laws?
I believe that we have a lot of work to do. I took on the NRA when I served in the legislature. I do support expanded background checks for both public and private. I was very active in the ballot question that we had. I do believe that Adam Laxalt should have found a way to implement that. And can't was a swear word in my classroom, and he can find a way to do the will of the voters, and he chose to ignore that. Weapons of war should not be on our streets. We need to ban the bump stocks. If that Congress doesn't act, we can do that at the state level. And more importantly, we need red flag legislation. They pass some legislation that allows a judge to maybe take a confiscate a gun for a short period of time. We need to, when you have someone with mental health illness, a severe mental health illness, or domestic violence charges, the judge needs to order that temporarily until that individual gets help so that you don't put people further at risk.
We've heard a lot about the commerce tax as this key to funding education here in the state. But the GOP has, since its adoption, called it a job killer. They say it's hurting the state's economy. You know, do you support the commerce tax, and what can you do to ensure that, you know, the state's economy continues to grow?
I do support the commerce tax. I commend Governor Sandoval for taking that bold step. And in that step, what he did is to make sure that we didn't harm our smaller businesses, because he gave them a credit for the modified business tax. So I have not heard any reports that actually said that it resulted in a loss of jobs. There are a handful of naysayers, but as I've traveled the state, meeting with businesses, chambers of commerce, EDON, I've not had that complaint come forward. So the commerce tax is predicted to raise about $400 million. it's not enough to fix education. But if you go back to what was voted by the voters in 2009 and redirect those dollars back into where the public supported, that begins to get you the majority of the money that you need in order to be able to fix that funding formula. We need to also, there's economic development that's going around the state. So you have the governor's office of economic development. They're doing a good job, and they need to continue to move forward. You have your local, your regional EDON and LVGA in the South, and then your rural development authorities, I guess, for lack of a better term. They have plans. What they're looking at, and I think it's probably the right way to view this, is entrepreneurial programs, promoting that, cooperatives, promoting that, and then taking a look at making sure that we don't harm small businesses. Part of my platform for economic development is really to expand our mom and pops, women-owned businesses, Black, Asian American, Hispanic-owned businesses, disabled and veteran. Those are where we really should be investing our time and money. Most businesses don't care about an abatement. They care about your education system. It's the number one reason that a business chooses to start up and or stay or come to the state. So why are we not investing in our kids so that they actually have the skilled workers that need to be out there? And we also need to look at career and technology, because there are 33% of our kids still don't need to go on to a college degree, and we need to make sure that we've got that skill set that's out there to support these other businesses that still need, whether it's in mining and repairing the large trucks that are driving out there, or in transit. There's a lot of need for skill sets that we need to make sure that that we're growing. So you do that from high school, you link them into apprenticeship programs, and then you take them into career and tech through the community college system.
Chris June Cagliani is a Clark County Commissioner and a Democratic candidate for governor. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. This was fun.